Climate change seems to be getting worse, but politicians can't seem to come to an agreement on what to do. Does it cost too much money? How dire are the consequences? You're listening to Upset Patterns. The economic theory behind environmental degradation is pretty simple. In most market transactions, the supply and demand curves only take into account the costs and benefits of the people engaged in the transaction. However, this doesn't take into account externalities. Something that has a positive externality, like a beekeeper having its bees pollinate the surrounding gardens, is undersupplied in the market. This is because the private transaction of the beekeeper buying its bees doesn't take into account the positive externalities. Something with a negative externality, like pollution, is oversupplied in the market because the cost that a transaction imposes on the rest of society isn't taken into account. So economic theory tells us that to take these costs and benefits into account, we can enact a tax for things with negative externalities or a subsidy on the markets if it has a positive externality. This is called the Pigouvian tax after the economist Arthur Pigou. It's actually how you pronounce it. So in the case of climate change, a carbon tax would try to take into account these negative externalities that carbon emissions have. So a carbon tax levies a fee on production, distribution, and use of fossil fuels. And a Pigouvian tax is interesting because it's revenue neutral. So it would tax the social cost of carbon and then make up for it by either lowering taxes in other areas or subsidizing things with positive externalities. So here to talk with me more about a carbon tax is someone who has emitted a lot of carbon emissions in his lifetime, Drew Dapprich. Drew, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Will.
I'm sure you've heard a ton about climate change. There are all these different ways that we can solve it, and no one can seem to come to an agreement.
Yeah, I can't seem to get away from carbon emissions and climate change in the news.
Climate change seems to be an increasingly dire issue. Catastrophic weather events, droughts, rising sea levels. We've got to do something about it soon, even though politicians can't seem to come to any sort of agreement of what to do.
I agree. You mentioned this idea of negative externalities and imposing a tax in order to help mitigate that. But in the case of carbon emissions, how would a tax even work?
In the case of a carbon tax, it's very theoretical, of course, because you're talking about imposing tax on such a massive scale. So how would it work in practice? Not so clear, but in theory, this tax levies a fee on production, distribution, and use of fossil fuels. This is made up for by a reduction in other taxes. The way that we would implement it is at the level of energy production. It could be at the level of coal mines and coal shippers, the energy suppliers. Either way, the tax will get passed on to consumers. And so one thing to note is that different fuels, because they have different amounts of negative externalities, they'll have different costs. So coal, which is a much dirtier fuel than natural gas, will have a much higher cost.
So how do we effectively measure these costs?
It's hard. And as sure as we are about the existence of climate change, it's not totally clear. There's a wide variance in how much these negative effects are going on. So we don't have an exact answer on the cost of one ton of carbon, but we can make a pretty good estimate. And I think uncertainty of it is often a talking point against a carbon tax. But the way I see it is that you're trying to discourage people from acting a certain way. And when we think of the negative effects of, say, a speeding driver or someone littering, we impose fines on them because we want to discourage that behavior. And we might not know the exact cost of that behavior, but that doesn't mean just throw our arms up and say, oh, we'll just let it happen.
If we implement this tax, though, you know, like so many other things, aren't things just going to shift to other countries? Aren't these production externalities just going to move to countries where they don't have that tax imposed?
If we make all of our carbon-intensive products more expensive, then why wouldn't American consumers just buy them from Canada, making the same products, burning the same dirty fuel, but they don't have the tax? And the way that economists would like this to happen in practice is that we impose tariffs on those products that take into account their carbon emissions. And so this makes it so the price of the import reflects the negative externality of carbon in the same way that a domestic good does.
Do we know that this would work at all? I guess I'm concerned that the U.S. would just be experimenting with this, and maybe we don't want to be the first one to take the leap. Have there been other countries who have already implemented this?
It would happen on a massive scale. Everything produces carbon when it's produced, pretty much. It's not something to be tinkered with lightly. But if you look at certain municipalities, provinces, and countries, their experiences are pretty encouraging. So in the case of Boulder, Colorado, they enacted a carbon tax that was also revenue offset, and their economy didn't crumble. British Columbia, for example, imposed one right before the financial crisis. And if you look at their economic performance relative to the rest of Canada, it really doesn't vary that much. However, their carbon emissions were 30% less than the rest of Canada.
All right. So if we have a good blueprint, as Canada has offered in this case and a couple others as well, why hasn't the U.S. moved a little bit quicker on this, since it is such a concern?
I think because it's happening on such a massive scale, it's also called a tax. The political will to do it is very uncertain. I said before, when you impose a carbon tax, you'll be making it revenue neutral by cutting taxes on others. So there are winners and losers, because certain people burn more carbon in their day-to-day life than others, and these offsetting tax cuts will also benefit certain people more so than others. If you're someone who has to make a very long commute, and you're used to your big pickup truck, you're going to be paying more taxes, and not everyone wants that. So it's revenue neutral in the sense that it's a zero sum across the whole economy, but a lot of times the people who lead carbon-intensive lifestyles or carbon-intensive industries, if you think of coal, for example, they're spending a lot of lobbying time and energy trying to make sure that this doesn't pass.
To that point, I guess, wouldn't the people who are on the lower rung of the socioeconomic world experience this tax a little bit more than those who, you know, have the means to pay for it?
That's a very good point. And I think maybe in even the most ideal scenario, that could be an unfortunate reality. The carbon tax will be offset by cutting taxes in another area. We want to discourage carbon emissions, so we're going to increase taxes on those actions. And we never want to discourage labor. It's always good to cut income taxes. And the obvious response is, well, rich people make more money, so a cut in the income tax will probably benefit them more. To make sure that the poor benefit the most from this, we can cut payroll taxes, Social Security and Medicare, which is a larger part of a poor person's disposable income than the higher classes.
Okay, so you mentioned cutting payroll taxes, healthcare, Social Security. Sounds like a great alternative to make sure that the poor don't suffer. Are there any other issues that may stem from implementing a carbon tax?
Definitely. A carbon tax, even practiced in its most ideal form, has weaknesses. So one thing is that accounting for the cost of carbon doesn't necessarily mean that we won't consume carbon at a point that's unsustainable for the environment. We're taking into account this negative externality, but we could still consume up the wazoo, and it could be coal, gasoline, whatever. As in any tax, when it's imposed politically, some entities will probably end up exempt. You could see that in the Waxman-Markey bill when they tried to impose cap and trade in the U.S., and a lot of big businesses, they just get out of it. So maybe in the case of a carbon tax, we want to make sure that nonprofits and schools are exempt. And then suddenly that leads to a slippery slope where, you know, you could end up with as many complications as our current income tax system. Not saying it's a certainty or that even with this, you know, negative side effect, it's not worth doing, but it is a possible weakness. Another thing is that carbon taxes encourage use reduction, but it doesn't do anything to make sure that new technology like mitigation or alternative energy sources come into play. So it takes care of the demand side, but not so much the supply side of harmful energy sources. Even if we're going to use less coal or harmful high carbon energy sources, it doesn't mean that because of this, we are incentivizing the production of lots of great new alternative fuels.
You mentioned earlier that a tax is a horrible word to most people in this country. It's almost certain that it won't get you reelected if you're a politician. So are there other alternatives that would be a little bit easier for people to swallow?
Well, first of all, you could advertise it as carbon pricing. That's one thing. It sounds a lot less harsh than a carbon tax, because really, when people just hear that term, they're going to jump to conclusions that their taxes are going to go up. And for some people, it is true. But there are a lot of different methods that aren't necessarily exclusive to a carbon tax that could also help us in trying to lower our carbon emissions and adapt better. So one is cap and trade. What the implementation of a cap and trade system is you set a ceiling on the level of carbon that a country can produce. And then companies have to get a permit to pollute, then you auction off those permits. In time, the number of permits goes down, and so those get more expensive, and companies are incentivized to find more environmentally friendly ways to produce.
What are some downsides to cap and trade? Some countries aren't going to want to be a part of this. How do we enforce that at all?
It's very hard. And so the Kyoto Protocol, for example, was signed by a lot of countries. Not even all the signatories complied, and a lot of developing countries didn't want to sign on. So finding international cooperation is very difficult. And like I mentioned before, the Waxman-Markey climate bill, it involved a lot of businesses getting waivers from the permits. And so you can see how politically it's not always going to work out in practice like we want it to.
So would that also apply to the tax as well? I mean, we can tax our citizens in the U.S. and reduce emissions in this country. However, it's global climate change.
It's very true. And so I think because it's revenue neutral, it doesn't have the downsides of what cap and trade. Because cap and trade isn't revenue neutral like carbon tax, it really will in the short term just be harmful to economic growth. So in the case of a carbon tax, we will impose those tariffs on international goods to make sure that we're doing the best we can to take into account the price of carbon. But that's not necessarily the case in cap and trade. Unless these can work in sync, but in cap and trade itself, it's not a part of the strategy.
Okay. So far, it seems like carbon tax might be a little bit more ideal. Is there a third option?
The traditional route of environmental regulation is command and control. That's sort of saying a mandate like cars need to be this efficient, you can't pollute this much. And it's easier said than done, because the government can say that producers need to be a certain level of efficiency with their production, but how are they going to make it happen? The great thing about a carbon tax or cap and trade is that you're shifting incentives. You're sort of introducing a market into these negative externalities.
It seems like with all of these options, we're going to need a way to pay for this somehow. Carbon tax, it would seemingly be built into the system, but with cap and trade and
command and control,
thank you, you're going to need to pay people to oversee this. So it seems like those are going to necessitate another tax.
I think the size of government's going to grow. You're going to grow environmental agencies to make sure that people are complying with these rules, but you weigh that against the cost of more catastrophic global warming. The longer we put this off, the harder it will be to deal with. Something like cap and trade or command and control or even a carbon tax, if it has these negative short-term effects on economic growth, they seem to dwarf the long-term destruction of rising sea levels and droughts and famine.
So based on that point, it doesn't seem like the political climate is ripe for a carbon tax at this point, because economic concerns are still the number one priority.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are fairly short-sighted, or because the effects of climate change aren't as explicitly evident in their day-to-day life, they don't really believe that it's happening. But what sort of I find encouraging about a carbon tax is that it is revenue neutral. And so you are able to get it through Congress. It's not going to have the short-term economic catastrophe that a lot of people might associate with something like cap and trade.
With a lot of things, the best solution seems to be a combination of all solutions. Is that the case here as well? Could we combine all of these?
Yeah, I think it's definitely possible you can have a cap and trade and carbon tax in sync. But we saw how difficult it was to have just cap and trade enacted in Congress. And ideally, all of these things could work in sync together. So the carbon tax could shift these incentives well and be revenue neutral. And we could correct a weakness of that, which is that there's not a ceiling for carbon emissions, with a cap and trade system. And then also we could invest in R&D. So the government could subsidize research into alternative fuels, things like that, as well as something called adaptation, which is what a Danish environmentalist and economist Bjørn Lomborg has stressed, which is that climate change might be at the point of no return already. So trying to cut back on carbon, it's too late. What we should instead invest our energy and research in is, for example, developing crops that are more resistant to heat, or make sure that rising sea levels won't affect us as adversely. And if you think of the Netherlands is pretty much all under sea level, but they're capable of withstanding the pressures of the sea. So that's something that we should look into.
So if all of these are viable options, why do you think the carbon tax solution is the best option?
For me, it's most encouraging because it is revenue neutral. In the short term, people will have to adjust their lifestyles. And that's why in most theoretical implementations of a carbon tax, it is a gradual increase. You're not immediately going to have a dollar tax on gasoline. It's going to happen over a couple of years so people can slowly change their lifestyles. But it is revenue neutral, and I think that's good. Perhaps the most convincing part of a carbon tax is that a lot of people in their day-to-day life, they want to do things that are environmentally sound. They know that their actions have these externalities, but there's, first of all, a lot of BS out there. So there's an industry trying to convince you that their products are sort of more environmentally sound than they are. They're not an industry, but every company is trying to convince you of it, and it's not always true. And you can't always keep track of what's right or the research out there, but with carbon pricing, the price of your externality is already in there. And so that is a really good way to communicate the social cost of a good and service. Upset Patterns is hosted by Will Comprenal from Tequila Mockingbird Studios in Austin, Texas, and produced by Paige Jensen-Slattengren. My guest today has been Drew Dapridge. Want more sources relevant to today's podcast? Have any questions, comments, discussion points, or suggestions for future podcast topics? Visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/upsetpatterns or email upsetpatterns@gmail.com. Everybody's gonna be